You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish Podcast.
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show. Today, it is a busy one. We're going to do the final word from our brilliant 3-0 victory over Spurs on Saturday evening at the Cottage. Also, we're going to react to the news, the sad news, that Louis Boamorse is going to be leaving Fulham once again for the Guinea-Bissau job. I did not have that on my 2024 bingo card. And also, given that there's not much to discuss on the pitch this weekend, we're going to spend some time discussing things off the pitch. The FST's relationship with the club, the latest in the whole ticket price debacle, a big section on that coming up in the pod. I'm joined by Jack Collins. Hello.
Hello, Sammy. Hello, listeners. How you doing?
Good, thank you. And a debut on the pod. Lovely to have him on finally. Jakub Krupa, how you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Hello.
Thanks for coming on.
It's a pleasure, absolutely. You know, long time listener, first time caller, so it's good to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you, Jakub. For people who don't know you, Hammersmith End season ticket holder, newly on the Fulham Supporters Trust board as well.
That's right, for just a couple of months. I'm just new to all of this, but very keen to make an impact on this, and also a journalist working in football anyway.
Yeah.
For European broadcasters, showing the games elsewhere. Somehow I'm not picked for Fulham games. Apparently I'm not
entirely objective.
I'm not impartial enough, so I'm being sent elsewhere, but I still enjoyed very much.
And that's on Viaplay in Poland, is that right?
That's right. So Viaplay in Poland and also in other European countries. I quite often do things in different languages as well, but mostly it's for Poland.
Wow. Doing it in not just covering football, but having to cover it in multiple languages as well. You're basically Jack's dream job.
Oh, it's incredible. Well, yeah, it does. And yeah, we had a nice one earlier in the season before, was it the Arsenal game?
Chelsea game,
did a little walk and talk outside of the Cottage, which is really nice. So,
my
yeah.
weirdest experience ever was at Chelsea, actually, when I worked in three languages at the same time. Moving between cameras and just switching languages is just ridiculous, but very enjoyable.
The man's an obscene talent.
Yeah, incredibly talented. I did one language at university and I've forgotten it all. So how you're able to do three or four is beyond me. Right, let's do the final word on Spurs on Saturday.
Sam, you missed some big news before this. You do know that you can, I thought you were going to open with this, to be honest, that Fulham have announced that you can watch the boat race from the Cottage.
Oh, right.
That's all I have to add.
Oh, okay,
if you're
good.
So inclined.
You know, annoyingly, clash with Sheffield United away. Annoyingly.
It really did make me laugh. I was like, really? Sure? Like, is this what we're going for? But alas, here we
are. I have elected to go to Sheffield United away over the boat race, but it was really tight. It was really tight. I really do care.
Leeds always come third anyway.
I really do care who wins a boat race between two universities that I have no affiliation to. Let's just do the final word on Spurs on Saturday. Jakub, it was just a glorious evening at the Cottage. I think always special, you know, 5:30 London derby. There weren't too many other games at that time either, so it felt like there was a lot of attention and focus on this game. And Fulham just, I think, put in what I would say is their best performance of the season. I know that there have been some other good contenders. Arsenal was brilliant. Brighton was fantastic. Bournemouth, we played well in parts. But this, for me, was as close to a complete performance that I feel like we've seen in a long time in the Premier League.
Absolutely, I agree. And obviously, as you say, there's a lot of hype about Saturday evening games under the lights, and Cottage is obviously such a special place for these games. And also, I have to say, I do find it really enjoyable whenever we play a team that is like super hyped. We're manager super hyped, like the club super hyped, and we kind of win it, and we win it big time. And I can go back to my colleagues or fans from different teams that's like, you know, you all talk about massive Brighton, the massive, you know, Luton, the massive Ange Ball football, and look what Lil Fulham stand to them. So it is really enjoyable. I thought it was a brilliant game for us. Obviously, so many players that impressed me as well, so it's kind of difficult to point. Well, I'm really personally happy with Lukic. I think he's the kind of the renaissance of his form, the way he's changed over the last few months has been incredible. Obviously, I know you're a massive fan of Mooney's and what happened there. Who's not? But I think Lukic is just fantastic these days. And but then again, everyone on the pitch was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, Jack, I mean, you've been calling for Sasa Lukic for basically since he signed, telling us all about what he did at Torino, and it's a bit strange how he hasn't been able to replicate that form at Fulham. Rightly, he got the plaudits. Alongside, I feel like it was Lukic and Robinson who really took the plaudits from Saturday, alongside Mooney's, who is kind of everywhere right now.
Yeah.
I found it weird this week that Rodrigo Mooney's is the Premier League cover photo on their official Twitter account. I was just like, what a world we're living in.
The simulation's broken, isn't
it? Let's back on Lukic, though. He really has been superb. And you guys last week were talking about, does Lukic stay in? Does maybe Harrison Reed stay in? Who's going to be alongside Polina? Silva went for that call of Lukic in the middle and got it absolutely bob on.
Yeah, it was an interesting one, because one of the things we discussed on Thursday last week was how you set the midfield up. Now, whether it is kind of a Harrison Reed figure who sits a bit deeper and allows you to have that kind of two-way pivot, or if you go for it. And we kind of talked a little bit around Pereira and Iwobi playing together in that period and seeing what happened. I thought that Lukic basically played that role. He was really high up on the pitch, and that press was really, really, you know, kind of fervent, if you will, from where Lukic started. And that was what I was really impressed with, because my concern about starting Polina and Lukic together was that they've been doing, or Lukic has been basically carrying out Polina's job in possession whilst Joao's been out of the team, and dropping between the centre-backs and picking up the ball and getting the ball moving from those areas. And actually to see him back into that role that he played at Torino, I really did enjoy AFC. I'm not sure if the pun was on purpose. He said he grabbed the ball by the horns, and considering his Torino legacy, I did wonder if that was on purpose or not. But
maybe.
It was a very Sasha at Torino performance, and it was really nice to see. And I know Tristan was talking about this on Twitter and discussing it and looking at the way that, you know, this was basically what he was signed for, to play alongside Polina, not to replace him. But for a lot of this season, he's been asked to do a role which he sort of felt a little bit more comfortable with than maybe the elements of the game that we have seen from him recently, which he's been sort of forced into a, you know, a different hole, if you will, a square peg in that Polina hole, and done a very good job with it. But actually, this is maybe more of the Lukic that I kind of expected right at the start. And this turnaround from where we were at Chelsea away at the start of the year to the performance he put in on Saturday against Tottenham is remarkable. But this is it now. And, you know, I've written down here, I think he deserved that, because he's earned that goal. And look, whether you think it's on purpose or not, I sort of think he's trying to get something on the ball to stick it towards the goal. I'm not sure he's gone, oh, I'm going to knee this into the corner. I think he's just trying to throw anything at it and seeing what happens, because chaos in the box is usually a good thing. So there's that kind of element of he deserves the goal, but the performances have been really, really impressive. And that partnership now, I think, is definitely, if not every game going forward, because I still think that Marco will chop and change in order to, you know, get the best out of individual oppositions. It's something that he does really well as a manager. He kind of tailors his game plan to who he's playing against. But in games where Fulham aren't favourite and aren't supposed to perhaps have loads of the ball, this is the midfield I'd be going with going forward. Because Lukic, and look, I'll talk about two-way players a lot, he's a two-way player when he's in this kind of form. Gets forward and makes things happen. His pressing game was exceptional. But also, there is that cover for Joao. If he does decide that he's going to maraud forwards, Lukic is the kind of player who will understand that and drop back in a way that perhaps if you were playing Alex Iwobi in that spot, and I love Iwobi, you know that.
Yeah.
He's less likely to drop in and be like, oh, I need to be the six for a minute. And that fluidity, I think, in midfield has got to be a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, Jakob also, I feel like one of the big talking points from Saturday was Anthony Robinson. And my dad was saying to me, he's like, is Anthony Robinson probably now one of the most in-demand left backs in the league? I mean, when you consider that like, we bought him for $2 million from Wigan, and we only partially did that because we felt a bit bad for them because they were in financial strife at the time.
Did we overpay the release clause, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, we did. We did overpay, I think, because Wigan were in such turmoil at the time. When you think about his progression from a left back that struggled to break past Joe Bryan to now, I'd say in the top five or six, certainly at the moment, kind of Premier Leagues that big clubs might want to sign this summer. It's just a remarkable transformation. And now like yeah, he's got six assists, which I believe is the most by an American in a Premier League season. I know that one of your early season predictions was the 10 assists.
In all comps. So we're starting to get towards edging towards it.
Everyone thought my Carabao hot take might have been the best one, but you might be sneaking up at the galloping like the horse from the back of the pack to take the crown.
Great Cheltenham reference the week after, or just a week out.
But anyway, a really long-winded way of saying, isn't Anthony Robinson good?
No, he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, again, you see him linked with big clubs every single week now. And it's always funny when you see fans of other teams going into the Fulham team and kind of, oh, you know, this guy, he's actually pretty good. Maybe you can swap him with someone from our team who's like not so good. I'm like, come on, guys, he's brilliant. Like, if you want him, that will cost you a lot of money. And I think I find it really annoying, again, having this kind of slightly different perspective of seeing Fulham not only as a Fulham fan, which, as we established, I'm very not very partial in that, but also like for conversations with people from all over Europe, following or watching Premier League. And they always tend to look at Fulham and like, yeah, you know, also run kind of team. And they're like, their players, their Pligny is good. And they're just random comments about some other players they remember that played somewhere 4 years ago. And I think Robinson is different in that sense that he's now established himself as a kind of, as you say, one of the best left backs in the world, in Europe, in Premier League, certainly. And in that sense, I think if we ever want to sell him, obviously that will cost a lot of money. I hope we won't because I think we need him.
There was a really lovely kind of headline, I suppose, on The Guardian from Ollie Connolly. And he called this performance, he said, Anthony Robinson reaches rarefied air. And I thought it was a really nice descriptor of the performance because, you know, again, talking about two-way players, he was everywhere, up and down in so many different ways. And the ball across, now we've criticised Robinson's final ball at times, and correctly so at times as well, but the ball across for this first goal is sensational. It reminded me of the Sessegnon ball against Burnley for Andre Schürrle all those years back. It's completely and utterly took the defender and goalkeepers out of the game. And that was one of those that we hailed at the time. We were like, Sessegnon's arrived in the Premier League. He's got this ability. And to be able to do that, considering what he'd done, the distance he's covered already, and the ability to go outside the defender and then whip it in, was incredible. And there really was. There was a great period on Anthony Robinson on Sunday's podcast. I don't want to go into it too deeply, but I thought it was a remarkable performance, both going forward and defensively. And Tom Harris wrote a piece in The Athletic basically talking about how he pinned Spurs because they were so concerned about, you know, how he was going to get at them going forwards that Pedro Porro was basically unable to make any sort of mark in the game because his position completely changed. And you look at the depth and the way that Spurs pinned, you know, to try and stop Anthony Robinson running through this team, that's where you got to a point of being like, wow, he's single-handedly locked down about three Spurs players. Not by necessarily, you know, tackling them or, but just from his positional sense and the fear he was inspiring. And that's what a player who's in this kind of vein of form, but also has the footballing knowledge and intelligence that Anthony Robinson has on top of the athletic attributes, which make him almost impossible to defend against when he is on one of those missions. If he does break at you, it's scary. I imagine him running at you for opposition defenders. So it meant that Spurs completely sort of shifted their game plan in game, not necessarily and just set them out to do this. It's like we have to be able to react to what's happening on the pitch right now. And so much of that was Anthony Robinson.
Yeah, if you haven't read Tom Harris's article actually on The Athletic about the kind of tactical breakdown from Saturday, really, really worth a read. Fantastic piece, I thought, in The Athletic. Definitely give it a look. Jack, I asked the question to Jakob earlier. Is this the most complete performance that we've seen from Fulham in the Premier League in several years? Would you agree?
Yeah, it felt like everything went to plan. And I think that there were obviously moments in the game where Spurs looked dangerous. It's almost impossible to stop a team like Spurs having those moments. So I don't think that should be a major worry. I think we should look at all of the positives in this. I think in my heart of hearts, the score probably should have been about 6-2. That's where it felt like it was at. So, you know, for it to be 3-0 doesn't feel miles off that. Although I think Spurs will be a bit like, how on earth did we not score? Timo Werner, I'm looking at you. But just generally, I think we kind of, and then I watched a quick take, you know, straight afterwards, looking at it and kind of being like reveling in the moment of all of it happening. And my kind of thoughts were that we have a puncher's chance against anybody when we play like this. And we're kind of in this space now that, and Dan Cook talked about it, saying Europe shouldn't be in focus, and without going all cliches, game by game, but just keep winning. Just keep finding this rhythm, keep these performances up. And what was lovely about this was that we played, as we said, pretty well against Wolves and came away having lost. And that could have really halted the momentum. And instead it hasn't. And instead we go out and we deliver, as you say, probably the best performance that we've put in this season. We're in an incredibly fun place. And I think that there is now a space that being safe and just being away from that relegation vortex I always talk about, getting kind of into a space of being like, well, we can kind of just, we're free to have a go at anybody because we're gonna be well away from that whatever happens now. It just feels like we should dial in and enjoy this. And look, I, as much as anyone, are guilty of being too reactive for results, for performances, all of these things. But I'm going to try and stop doing that for the rest of the season. That, you know, if we have a bad performance and we lose against Sheffield United, I don't think it's likely to happen. But, you know, these weirder things have happened in this Fulham season. We are, in so many ways, the perfect mid-table club. We can go and beat Spurs. We can also go and lose or go throw away a 2-goal lead at Burnley or go and lose at Sheffield United, whatever that is, it's okay. If we're going and we're putting in performances and we're playing, then that's fine. And I think it's just a sense of being like, let's just enjoy this now and see where we get to, because it's a really cool place to be.
And you mentioned that Andrew Schürrle a goal against Burnley. I mean, it's been a long way since
that game.
I remember being there, that horrendous rain, own goals, everything was horrible about that day. And to think about, you know, where we are now and we can enjoy these games, we can win 3-0 against Spurs at home with a complete performance, we're in a good place.
I'm still nowhere near bored of being mid-table.
No. And also, like, without being funny, we shouldn't be for like 5 years. There's like a real sense of like, I can understand where Palace have got to and Palace fans are on this. And I do think there is a sense of like a little bit of jeopardy always does help. But we are nowhere near that. We can have a good 5-6 more years of being mid-table before we start to be like, can we just do something, please?
Yeah. I do think cups are so important for stopping that feeling.
Yeah.
And like Palace, you know, have this kind of like, oh, we're always in 12th. I think we're giving them a run for their money for 12th this year, by the way. But I think if Palace had a Carabao Cup semi-final, and they've got other problems, Roy and all of that, but that stuff does keep you fresh. That stuff does keep you kind of like your lust for the club. It keeps it all a bit more alive when you do those cup runs, as well as playing well and having some good results in the league.
But also, it's great to be winning at home. And I think that's the thing. Like, our away form hasn't been great, but our home form has been exceptional. It reminds me a little bit, and obviously not to the same extremes, but of the Chris Coleman years, right? Where we weren't great away from home, but at the Cottage, it was really like, come on then, in you come. And people have been comparing it to the Roy Hodgson years. I think there's more of a sense of it being those kind of early cookie years where everything felt quite fresh and exciting still. And there is that home sense of, at the Cottage, we'll have a go at anybody. And if we lose, we lose. And I think that's a nice, you know, that's the other point. If we go and play, and I think we will have a say in this title race, and, you know, without going all Kristen Cole kingmakers, but I do think there is a sense that Fulham having both City and Liverpool at the Cottage is a pretty cool place to be. But whatever happens in those games, if we lose both of them, okay, if we get a point off one of them, I won't be surprised. And if we beat one of them, I'd be like, yeah, well, it can happen here. And that's interesting in itself.
And also, I think what helps with keeping that season fresh and exciting for all of us is the emergence of unexpected heroes, like Unis, like Lukic now. It's just this kind of stuff that makes you feel like, okay, maybe we're not playing for like necessarily for Europe. We're not finding relegation off. But it's just these little stories that make you really excited about going to the game and seeing, you know, what Ken Mooney's doing again if he's put up a patch over. Yeah. I think all of that just makes it also super exciting.
It's also how you get to 12th, right? You know, okay, yes, we're losing some games, but we're winning 3-0 against teams, putting in good performances. I remember early in the season when we got to about kind of November and our wins had been against Everton, Luton, Sheffield United, and a couple of those weren't convincing. And I think when you're at that stage, you're like, okay, right, we're in a position, but like, if you read between the lines, it's not been good and it's certainly not been enjoyable. Yeah. But since about early December, barring a bit of a blip in January when I think AFCON and injuries and fixtures really took it out of us, it's been a pretty great season ever since about the November international break, which has been incredible. I remember that 05-06 season. That was, I think, the epitome of like Fulham great at home, shite away. I think that's when we went and did the win at City and the penultimate away game to finally win an away match. We lost at Sunderland, and who hadn't won a home game all season. But then at home, I remember we were battering teams. I never forget, we beat West Brom 6-1. Heide Helgeson scored a hat trick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were just magic at the Cottage. And then we went away and we couldn't do anything. I don't think that's been quite the case this season with Fulham. I think away we've been
okay. All right.
Yeah. Results haven't always gone our way. And I think actually this latter half of the season, when you look at some of the away games we've got to come up, I think we can actually make the away record.
Yeah, we'll tidy it up a bit.
I think we can tidy that a little bit. Yeah. I think a lot rests on what happens at Bramall Lane. I think you lose there and I might be like, okay, put my hands on this, but we've been rubbish away.
Yeah,
but,
agreed.
Let's just go on to one big bit of news from the week. Louis Boa-Morte, Fulham's first team coach, Silva's right-hand man for a long time. You know, he was there in the Everton days. Was he there at what? I think it was Everton where he started with Silva, or was he there at Watford as well?
No, I think it was Everton. I'm pretty sure.
He's definitely at Everton. He's going to be leaving for the Guinea-Bissau job, which wasn't one on my radar as being a big available job. I hadn't closely followed Guinea-Bissau's managerial vacancies, but clearly I should have because they've managed to nab Louis Boa-Morte. Jakob, I guess there's two parts of this. There's being sad because Louis's a Fulham legend and it's just... it's been really great to have him around and, you know, he's got his song and everyone loves him. But also, I guess my question is, like, how bigger, if any, impact will this have on the first team? Is he the big brains behind the entire operation? I wouldn't have thought that, like, we're going to notice too much on the pitch, but hard to know, really. Like, what do we think? Is this something that's, like, the beginning of the end? It's all going to unravel as soon as Louis Boa leaves?
Now, I think we will be all right. Obviously, depends what Marco does with it. But I think the important thing there is that he's that kind of link with fans. And you see the love that he gets from the terraces every single game. And I've seen someone already say that they're buying the flags of Guinea-Bissau on Amazon to take them to the last game away at Luton.
Yeah, and I'm fully
just
on
like
board.
Just like we did with another player.
Yeah. I'm going to be bringing to Luton Town a Guinea-Bissau flag and my Luton Town shirt.
So obviously that's big. I think one of the questions that I have is, who do we replace him with? Do we go for like a traditional kind of coach appointment, or do we go for someone who's got that link? Are we looking for like a Kevin McDonald figure, for example, or Tim Ream if he ever retires? Hopefully not.
They've been brushing up on their Portuguese.
But, exactly. But I think that will be the interesting element of how this appointment goes. But we'll see.
I'm not mad. Like wildly mad about this, because I do think that there is a sense that Fulham have an eye on Louis Boa-Morte being a head coach in the future. So for him to go and pick up a job that, you know, maybe the pressure is a little bit off. Obviously, they lost every game at AFCON. Also, the sub narrative that everybody's missed is that Louis Boa-Morte is now going to be coaching Marcelo Gallo. No one has been talking about this. two Fulham legends in one place, right? Like two absolute icons of this football club. It's incredible. But I do think that him going and maybe going, and maybe it wasn't this job that I kind of had an eye on, but I did wonder if this summer he might go and pick up a second, a full-time head coach job with an eye that if Marco Silva was to leave in 2-3 years' time. Now, obviously, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if he's going to be pinched. I don't know how that's going to, pan out. But I do think that Fulham were looking at that and thinking, maybe if we're going to promote Louis later on in his career, this is where it actually becomes a little bit, you know, can he go straight from being number two to number one? Does he need to go out and get some experience first? This is probably the latter. And so in terms of a long term, could this result in him returning to the club as head coach one day? I think it might not be the worst thing in the world. Obviously, I'm sad to lose the emotional bond, all of these things. But I actually think that him going and carving himself a role as a head coach might be the first step on the path to him becoming Fulham's head coach one day.
Do you think that there will be an immediate impact of Louis going? I mean, there's been examples down the years where there's been a head coach who's the figurehead and there's been an assistant coach who is actually the brains of the operation. And not that this was the case, but I always remember Javi Pereira was credited during Slavisa's time of being actually very instrumental in coming up with game plans and stuff. Not that Slavisa couldn't do it either, but
no.
It doesn't strike me that that's this kind of relationship. And that I feels like maybe Louis Bowe is more of a... I don't want to reduce him down to saying he's a player motivator type, but...
I think he's probably, you know, spent a lot of time in this role learning from Marco Silva, right? This has been... Yes, he's been his number two for a while, but he came into that role with very little managerial experience. And he's gone in there and been the guy and had to be on the sidelines a fair bit as sort of temporary head coach because Marco likes to get himself banned about four times a season. So he has grown into this, I think. And obviously coming back to Fulham is... an incredible, like, nice moment for him. But I think wherever Marco Silva had gone, there would have been a space for him to sort of stay and grow. And there's other people in the background as well. Gonzalo Pedro's in there. And it's going to be interesting to see if he's, you know, they're both credited as first team coaches, right? Louis Bowe is assistant manager in inverted commas, right? But there is another first team coach in here in Gonzalo Pedro. Now, I think Fulham will fill the gap. But I wonder if actually the move that the club go with is that Gonzalo Pedro basically takes on the duties or the kind of assistant manager duties or cover manager duties that Louis Bowe had, and whether someone comes into that other role as kind of, okay, we just keep the kind of chain running. I would be very surprised, much as I like the idea of it being, you know, a Fulham legend coming back in here, I'd be very surprised if it's not someone who buys into that kind of Lusophone Portuguese element of the background stuff.
Yeah, I don't get the impression this needs to be, where's Kevin McDonald? Where's
Rafa Silva from Benfica as a player manager for a year? That could get, well, you know, player slash assistant manager for a year. That I could start to get on board with.
Yeah, I don't feel like we need to take Sean Davis out of the commentary box just to make sure that we've got some sort of Fulham connection in
I think there's enough of a connection now with Marco as a person and a manager that we'd never need to worry about in the same kind of
way. I think the Louis Bowe was a nice to have. It was like...
I think it helped to shore it up really early on. There was no sense of, oh, we don't have any continuity. And especially given the Parker debacle that had preceded Marco Silva coming in and the fact that he came in with his reputation perhaps a little bit tarnished from what had happened towards the end of things. I think it basically, the fact that Louis Bowe was there as his, you know, second in command was almost like, well, we're going to take to him because if Louis likes him, then so do we.
Yeah.
And I think that probably doesn't matter as much anymore because Marco's so loved and respected within the fan base.
Yeah, completely. Well, look, best of luck to Louis Bowe. I'm fully on board for the Guinea-Bissau flags. I was also in a conversation about, you know, should we do a banner or something, a tifo at the end of the season? I would love to see something like that for Louis Bowe. You know, like, not many people are successes on the pitch and off the pitch. It's a pretty rare breed. You know, Chris Coleman, Louis Bowe. Yeah, thinking back. So I would be in full support of that if someone can bring a banner in. Let's take a break there and we'll be back with part two with some off-the-pitch discussions.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Jack and Jakub. Thank you to Green King Sport for sponsoring the Thursday Club this season. If you want to watch any televised sport, head to your local Green King Sport pub. They'll show all the games, no matter what channel it's on one of their big HD screens. Plus, during any televised sporting fixture, you can get 10% off your drinks by using the Green King Sport app. This weekend, you've obviously got lots of internationals. England are playing on Saturday night. So if you want to go watch the England game and you'd rather not stay at home, you'd rather head to a pub, head to your local Green King Sport pub and you get 10% off your drinks. It's a win-win. What are you watching this weekend, Jack?
I don't know.
Are Ireland not playing?
I don't know.
You don't even... Oh, wow. You're that despondent with Ireland. You don't even know the fixtures.
No, we are playing Belgium, but I'm not sure what day it's on.
Okay.
So, like, it gets the international break and I have to watch everything. So, you know, there's a couple of Guatemala games I've got an eye on. I'm going to be keeping an eye on Guinea-Bissau to see what Louis is actually walking into. There's some, you know, some interesting stuff going on. But I'm excited about, we've got a couple of Fulham internationals, right? So there is this. We've got big games for Harry Wilson in particular.
Yeah, Euro
who
qualifier.
Has these Euro qualifiers. And look, there's a couple of really interesting storylines, you know, outside of Fulham around these international qualifiers and the idea of a couple of teams making their first ever European championships. Got an eye on Kazakhstan, who were brilliant in the group stages and sort of came from nowhere. So there's some excitement to be had. Luxembourg could become, you know, a team that were bottom, almost, you know, right at the foot of the world standings 10, 15 years ago, who have been playing some great football. So loads of interesting storylines to keep an eye on in this international break. But from a Fulham perspective, I think that Harry Wilson one jumps out at me as kind of, we should kind of be keeping, you know, an eye on what's going on there. But then there's also these CONCACAF Nations League games. And yeah, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Anthony Robinson. Bobby Decordova-Reed's going to be on the other team as they kick off their campaign. Well, tomorrow as we're recording this, today it's released.
Yeah, they're playing. So the CONCACAF Nations League finals are taking place in Arlington, Texas. So the USA are playing Jamaica in the first semi-final. So obviously you've got Anthony playing for the US. Is Tim in the squad?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Okay. And then Bobby playing for Jamaica. And then in the second semi-final, it's Panama versus Mexico. So Raul is back from injury and presumably will be in the squad, but he's only just working his way into fitness, isn't he? So
I don't think he's in the squad.
He's not in the squad. Okay, forget about Mexico. USA Jamaica is the one to keep an eye on from a Fulham perspective on either sides. So we're guaranteed to have one player in that Nations League final. And I thought actually from a good recovery and rest point of view, that final's on Sunday.
Yeah.
So actually there's going to be a good amount of rest for the boys heading over to the States, which is often not the case.
Yeah. Big game for Luke de Fougerolle as well, if he plays. Yeah. Because Canada are in the Copa America playoff.
Oh, yes.
So it'd be interesting to see how that one pans out as well. And if he gets any game time, he's been around that squad for a little while now.
Mm.
People starting to have a look, I think, the Canadian setup. Was he under new management? John Herdman left to go and manage an MLS. So it's going to be intriguing to see what that looks like.
Yeah. And best of luck, I think. The most important game, though, is definitely Harry Wilson for Wales, because a chance to qualify for the European Championships. And a lot rests on Harry. He's one of the leaders in that squad now. So good luck to Wales and all of our Welsh Fulhamish listeners. I think there's a few. I've had a couple.
I'm sure there is a few.
There's a couple over in Wales. Right. FST stuff, Jakub. There was the March meeting, which took place. Well, certainly the notes were released last week. It took place on the 13th, so it's about a week ago. You were parts of this March meeting with Fulham. It took place about a week ago. The notes were released earlier this week. And you're obviously a board member of the FST. And we didn't really call you here today to be like an official rep of everything FST. It was just like we wanted to have you on. But it also was a nice like...
option.
Yeah. But it's also just like, I'd be interested to hear
what it was like in that room, because there's been a lot of tension. There's always quite a lot of attention on the FST monthly meetings, but this March one picked up a lot of headlines because it just felt very frosty, and it feels like we're at a real crossroads now in that relationship between the main supporters trust for the Fulham fan base and the club. And it feels like everything that's been developed over the past kind of 6 or 7 years, the memorandum of understanding, it's all kind of reached ahead, and it does feel like this is not where I think anyone wants to be. I'm sure neither the club nor the supporters trust want to be at this kind of loggerhead position, which it now feels like it is.
Absolutely. I think that's fair. Obviously, we want to have a constructive relationship with the club. That's why probably we get so frustrated when some of the questions are not answered, and when we don't get full transparency of insight into how certain decisions are being made. So in that sense, that meeting was, again, us going back and saying, look, there are certain issues that fans feel very strongly about. And we did that survey among members of the trust, asking them about their view in ticketing. And, you know, it's very clear 65% said that the increase in ticket prices had negatively impacted the relationship with the club. 6% said that they felt heard on tickets, and you know, the club reacted appropriately to the whole discussion about being priced out. And we just brought these points again to the table, saying, look, this is not just us, a couple of guys from the trust, raising these issues with you because we are on a kind of private war with the club or whatever. It's just this is what people want you to hear. And they want us to bring this to the table. And I think, as you can imagine, that conversation was difficult and fractious. And I think it's in diplomacy, they call it frank exchange of views. So I guess that gives an idea of how went it well. But yeah. But I think it needs to be done also because I think we are at this really weird point sometimes with the trust. At least that's my perception as someone who is connected to Fulhamish, to Twitter accounts, to all sorts of social media, where the trust is being criticized by the club as being too hawkish, too negative about the relationship with the club, and, you know, coming up with problems. And then the fan base goes, oh, you're doing nothing, you're just going there for a nice cup of tea. By the way, I've never been to a cup of tea with Alistair McIntosh. But it's just that element why I feel like we really need to talk about these issues. And obviously, the problem with so many of these points is that we can have, and we do have, and I think the trust, myself, everyone else, that is very grateful for a constructive relationship and a kind of operational level. So when we talk about problems of congestion, as we had the problems with Liverpool game, or ticketing, or touting, or whatever, we can have a meaningful conversation. You can see certain small things change, and that makes you feel better. I know if you notice, there's now notices all over Stevenage Road about touting operation, do not buy tickets from them. That's something we repeatedly asked for. Then it's a minor small thing. Obviously, the dispute, the disagreement is where massive discussions about tickets, pricing out, the future model, the sustainability of the club. And that's where it's just so much more difficult to find some sort of agreement, because obviously we, as fans, come to this with kind of heart-first approach I want to be there, I want to support the team, I don't want to be priced out, I want to pay as little as I can to come to a game. And the club goes, well, actually, you know, we have to look at the economy of that, we have to look at how we can sell it, and it's just difficult to find an agreement on that.
I mean, it felt like reading this as well, like I was quite shocked that, well, I completed the survey and for the club almost straight off the bat just to say that the survey was flawed seemed like a bold point of view, just completely almost.
It's also
right.
It's a pretty bold point of view with sort of no evidence to back it up. It's like, well, if you can show me why you think that, then fair enough. But just as an outright statement, it doesn't
well,
add
up. The notes said, Alistair McIntosh thought that the survey was seriously flawed, asked too many leading and biased questions, and was primed with the word protest when advertised. I mean, do you agree that you thought the survey was flawed?
I don't think so. No, obviously, you know, hindsight is a great thing. We can probably phrase certain questions in a different way. But when you look at the survey, it does say that the things we ask you about, this is not the view of the trust. We're just giving you a sentence, agree or disagree with it, tell us what you think about it. So when we ask about different ways of protest, that doesn't mean we necessarily want to do that protest. One of the questions there was about disrupting a football game. I never want to do that personally. I know if that's a trust position, if that's just me, I would never want to disrupt a Fulham game ever, 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 unless that's like literally the worst possible scenario. We'll still ask that question just to have a kind of sense of how many people do feel that way at the moment. So I think it's important to give people a range of views and range of questions and range of kind of options to choose from. So again, there's a sense that, and I think it goes back to what I said earlier about how people feel about the trust and about the club and the lack of communication there. You know, one of the questions was about, do you think that protests, if any, should be directed at the management of the club and not the team? And I thought that was a fairly uncontroversial question. Obviously, I think most people would say, yeah, that's got nothing to do with Jean Poligno. We don't expect him to join the protest. It is about the way the club is run. But that was seen, because of other things happening in the Fulham kind of scene, was seen as, are you endorsing abuse of management? Or are you suggesting that people should go after management or should, you know, send angry emails or they should call up people in the ticket office and say horrible things? Obviously not. I mean, obviously, I think there's a line to be drawn there, and I personally feel very strongly about it. Perhaps as someone who's also getting lots of abuse on social media for all sorts of different reasons, that this is unacceptable. And I think that's why the minutes note, there's a sentence there when we say we absolutely do not condone any abuse of anyone. There's a suggestion that, you know, people say, call the ticket office and say things that we wouldn't want them to say. Of course, that's wrong. And I think it's important to say it. But the question itself, I don't think you can say that the survey is wrong or illegitimate or whatever, because you misunderstood the question that was asked. I understand why you feel strongly about it if you are on the receiving end of some of that. I 100% understand that. But that's not what the question asked about.
No, also, like, you know, just to go back on that kind of disrupting a game point, and I agree with you in that obviously you want to see games play out in their entirety and be, you know, you're there to watch a game of football, right? And enjoy yourself and all of those things. Also, I look at the fact that the Bundesliga and the Zweite Bundesliga have just had a protesting period where games after games after games were interrupted, and the DFB have backed down on their original investor deal because they were like, it's bad for the image of the game. Now, I can understand why there's frustration in all of these different parts, right? But the fact is that because this was achieved, and because that frustration was built over, that visible protest and frustration of games and spectators and sponsorships and all of the above, that's where it hits. And I don't think the DFB backed down on this deal unless these games are impacted. So I agree with you on principle, is that obviously you want to watch games. But I think that the idea that if people are unhappy with a club that they feel, you know, has been a part of them for, you know, however long, whether you've been there for 100 years or 10 or one, you know, if you feel that the club that represents you is now a different place to where it used to be, and that's not to say that things can't change and people can't move with the times, but you do have, you know, the right to be like, well, I do not feel this represents me anymore.
Absolutely.
And that's what these questions are asking, not should you, you know, ring up the ticket office. And if you are, then just as a heads up, that's completely misplaced anger. It's not the employees here. It's the senior management.
Yeah. And the employees do a lot of really brilliant work. And just to say, I mean, I understand that anger because I'm angry as well. I mean, at the end of the day, I have to buy that season ticket. I have to spend all that money. That does annoy me. And all the other things that we can surely talk about annoy me. But I think, so that's why I understand that anger. But I just feel like we, both sides of the discussion, that's both probably us in a way and the club, need to change something about it, because that's just road to nowhere in a way. And, you know, when you say, giving the German example, part of the problem with what we see at Fulham is it's not only Fulham, but it's the way the whole game changes and the whole Premier League situation of English football changes. You know, just today you have announcement, or I think yesterday you had announcement on season ticket prices at Manchester City, when people going angry about, I think, 6% rise, much lower than what we had at Fulham. And now you find yourself in a slightly unusual situation where there's an alliance to be struck between Fulham fans and Manchester City fans about being priced out. So I think for some of these questions, you need a much bigger solution than just at the kind of trust to one single club level.
Also, it's something that I think the German football in particular does really well, is that fans put aside club tribal, you know, allegiances when it's the well-being of the game on the line. And I think that maybe fan bases are too tribalistic in some ways. And that's not to say, look, the atmospheres in Germany and the rivalries are incredible, but they're also a bit like, okay, at times we might just need to put this aside in order to for all of our well-being. I just don't know if we're just past that stage already and past that stage of where German football feels like it belongs to the fans and, yeah, and English football doesn't.
I think we're getting to that point, and I don't know if you agree with me, but I think we're getting to that point in the UK as well. You know, we, on the weekend, you had Spurs fans showing the banner "Save Our Seniors" about the concession tickets for seniors who are being priced out of the stadium, yep, after 40 years of supporting the team, obviously.
The removal of senior concessions, I couldn't That's believe just, they've yeah. done that. I mean, criticised Fulham, at least we haven't gone that far yet. I mean, that's a disgraceful act.
Oh, yeah, we tweeted our support to that. Obviously, Spurs fans were happy then. I think West Ham joined in as well. I think there's a sense of solidarity there and people saying, you know, it's not just one, two, three clubs that do it. It's becoming much more systemic, much more problematic in that sense.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that in a way, these problems that we see are not just Fulham problems, and I think they can be probably resolved at a kind of different level. Obviously, we now have a regulator coming in at some point with the new legislation. We have all of that happening. So I just hope that gives us an opportunity to restart that relationship a bit. But obviously, I understand that anger. I fully understand that anger.
But I mean, this new legislation is coming in and the fan advisory board is now going to be a mandatory thing. It feels a bit like, though, in Fulham's case, and maybe it's testament to how far the relationship had been like developed years ago, that we're now taking a backward step because of regulation, because the club alluded to, they didn't confirm, but they seem to hint at the fact that actually the relationship with the trust had broken down and that in the future they might look to reduce the amount of meetings with the trust in favour of this new fan advisory board. And it's so important to say that Fulham get to choose most of the people on that board. Now, there is a member from the trust, but still, it is a club-picked thing. And I couldn't almost believe the kind of the gall in here, just to almost be so blatant with it, saying, no, actually, we're not going to speak to the trust that's independent. We're going to speak to this fan advisory board that we pick. I feel like that's something to be hugely concerned about.
Yes. Is it not a breaking of the memorandum of understanding? Is that not just a fundamental smashing up of what was agreed between the two parties?
I'm not a lawyer, but I presume you could agree that. You could argue that. So on your point about FAB, we asked FSA specifically about it. They say Fulham is in the minority in the sense that most clubs have an independent process of appointing people to the FAB.
Of course they do.
We don't. And of course you have a trust representative, you have represented from other groups, but the majority, as it were, on the new board will be club picked. You will have a club representative. I think he cannot or she cannot be a chair of that body, but still, it gives you this idea of like, that's just not the way these things should be run. And that's probably why I so often find myself in a situation, particularly as a new member of the trust, going to people, if you think that we're doing things wrong, that's a perfectly legitimate point of view, but join the trust, because even now with FAB, that will be literally the only independent way of getting things done or raising things with the club, even if the frequency changes or whatever, because the FAB will be doing its own things in its own ways. Now, obviously the trust will wait and see what happens there, what comes out of this. They want to do surveys as well. We want to help them design them, because I think there's now, you know, we talk about how to do surveys and how to phrase questions so they're not leaving out. I think we'll want to look at these questions as well. But I think it's more important than ever to have a trust that's got a high number of members who are independently minded, who can govern themselves. If at the end of the day, you know, we get 1,000 Fulhamish members joining the trust and saying, you know what, Jakub is horrendously bad, let's kick him out, we're going to take it in a different direction, I'll be the happiest person in the world if they get something out of it, if they get effective as a result. So I think that's how I really strongly feel about it, because it does feel like we need to change the dynamics with the club somehow. I think there's a way to do it in a much more constructive way. Hopefully, we'll see if they want to engage. But I think that FAB issue is the key for me, because otherwise you just essentially create a kind of licensed opposition almost to the club in the FAB, which I just don't think that's how it should work. And as you say, it kind of goes against the idea of the legislation in the first place.
Yeah, it feels a bit like this, and obviously this seems to be a fairly unique scenario to Fulham, that it's not strong enough. Like that should have been, surely that's just literally a word that needed to be in there, or a line that any fan advisory board needs to be independently selected. That's a failure.
It's finding loopholes again.
That's a failure
of
the legislation.
Are you suggesting that our lawmakers are not perfect? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I know, I know.
Okay, look, let's give the FAB benefit of doubt. Let's see when it forms. I think it should be in April. Let's see how it goes. Let's see who's on it. Let's see who the club picks for that. Maybe there's a way of using that as a way to have that relationship, maybe to mediate, whatever. I don't know.
I mean, the hope is, I mean, it's going to still be difficult for the club to go on there and find 100% worth of people that don't think it's getting a bit expensive at Craven Cottage, no matter who they...
I mean, good luck. Because I don't know any single person that would say, no, there's no problem with ticketing, there's no problem with ticket pricing, there's no problem with pricing people out, there's no problem with all these other things like Riverside, the way it's... So good luck, because I genuinely think that, and that's probably why I'm still a bit cautious about FAB, is that once it starts its operations, let's see if we can maybe convince people that are on the FAB, however they were picked and whatever they come from, that, you know, there are certain things that we need to raise, we need to discuss to protect this football club and the relationship with the fan base of the community. So yeah. We'll see.
I mean,
but
one
join the trust. I think that's my main thing.
Yeah. I mean, one other point that was raised in this meeting, and I find this such a frustrating argument, but it just seems to be the line constantly, that it says the trust consistently undervalued the enormous financial support that the current owners had given the club. And this frustrates me endlessly, this position, Jack, that just because the owners pump money into the club, and I get it, football economics and all of that, without the Khans, if they pulled the plug tomorrow, like, there would be problems. They do bankroll this club. Yeah. But it does not mean, and it literally goes against the very first thing that Shahid Khan said, that he was going to be a custodian of this football club. It does not mean that you just get to do things completely unchallenged by the fan base. Like, that's not the relationship. That's not how it works. And I find that incredible that we're still just doing this basic argument.
It doesn't add up. Like, it, without being funny, like, yes, of course. One, I don't think that's undervalued at all by anyone. I think everyone's pretty grateful for, you know, the transfer spends, the investment, all of it. I don't think... The difference is, if you'd said to everybody, okay, cool, we're not going to build a new Riverside stand, but your season ticket is going to remain the same price as the next 10 years, I think everyone would be like, yeah, fair enough. You can't just be like, oh, cool, we built it, so therefore you have to pay for it. That's not how it works. And also, like, you come into a seat like this at the football table, like, nobody comes into this being like, cool, I'm going to make a load of money out of this. Unless you are literally the Glazers, I suppose. But, like, nobody else, and that is a very unique situation at Manchester United, nobody else is going in going, yeah, I'm going to make plenty of profit out of this. Like, you know, it's one of those things where people buy into clubs because it gives you a certain one level of prestige and a seat at the table. Two, it gives you ins and outs with different people. And three, because it's an incredibly, you know, amazing thing, I imagine, to own a football club and to be responsible for its operations. I don't think that means you're like, okay, cool, I'm going to make loads of money out of this. So the position doesn't make sense. It's a nonsensical argument. And also, you know, to kind of add to all of that, we've talked about it time and time and time again. Ticket prices are such a low element of what the club makes. Like, it doesn't, it's just a completely separate argument that is being utilised for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I mean, you may know Kieran Maguire, who's the academic about doing work on football sustainability. And he says, and I love this quote, that there are four reasons to own a club: profit, love, vanity, and insanity. And there's a kind of different mix of the four. Obviously, the love argument gets weaker and weaker. You don't have local-made multi-billionaires everywhere just waiting to invest in Fulham. So I understand that sustainability, we need to make money somewhere thing. And to your point about Riverside, I don't think there's that many people who say, you know, just because of Riverside, we're angry. I think there's a kind of, not acceptance, but less of an annoyance about the Riverside, because everyone sees that as a kind of, yeah, we get that. You need to make some money somewhere. These old little things in the corner of the pitch that we had before, they're just not up for the job in this day and age. You have to make some money somewhere. But what about 18% for Hammersmith fans? What about, you know, massive rises elsewhere? Yeah. So I think that in that sense, when you look at three amusing presentations with CGI visuals and stuff about Riverside and what you can get there for like £10,000 or whatever, you look like, well, whatever, fine. Like, it's not whatever, but obviously you know what I mean. Like, that's just part of the game.
If that was subsidizing everybody else,
that's right,
then fine.
That's part of the game as it is now. Yeah. I don't like it. You probably don't like it, but that's just the way it is.
Where it is. Yeah.
But I think there's just so much that you can do elsewhere. And I think also there's an element of, you know, if you're a loyal fan, you want certain things safeguarded or protected. So I think, for example, about the Newcastle game, which obviously was a controversial one. For the record, I boycotted the game. I thought that was wrong. Yeah. That's not necessarily where everyone on the trust is. I am in that position. One of the most annoying things about it for me was not just the individual ticket price, but the fact that, you know, oh, we can't hold tickets for season ticket holders because we'll just sell them. Because that's the way our system works. And I'm like, well, just change the system. Like, if we talk about building a relationship based on loyalty, that goes both ways. So obviously I want to see that you value that relationship, and you can wait that 1-2 days and help me get my season ticket and buy my ticket in the place that I'm normally with my mates and friends around me.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of stuff there about symbolism and about communication that you can fairly easily sort out. And also to the point about profit or making money, you know, I can give you my personal example on that. I wanted to hire the flag for my birthday a couple of years ago. It was the most difficult process in the history of booking what is essentially pub that I can think of. Yes, it's at the stadium, obviously it's a special place, but it was just loads and loads of emails with like ridiculous questions, like ridiculous pricing as well. Another example for the Luton game, it was just before my one mate's wedding, the other one's, I think, 40th birthday. We wanted to upgrade to hospitality from our Hammersmith End tickets, the season tickets, because we can afford, it's a nice position to be in. We want to help the club as well. It's an important day. Let's celebrate. It was a nightmare because the system does not, like, there's no scenario in which you can upgrade as a season ticket holder. You can sell it to, you know, a lawyer from a city law firm or whatever, but as a season ticket holder, there's just, the computer says no. And I think there's just loads of elements that you can build that relationship in a different way. Just imagine if Fulham go back to you and said, like, you know, if you want to have a 20% discount on organising your birthday event somewhere inside the stadium, and you'll be like, yeah, I love that. As a season ticket holder, I feel appreciated. That's relationship based on loyalty. And there's a commercial gain for the club that helps them.
But there's no
thinking about it because it's just so much easier to flog them for like thousands of tickets to someone else.
Well, I think the other thing that annoys me about... I'm always like kind of dubious to say this out loud, but I know kind of where I'm going with this. If the club sold out every single game, and I get that maybe one day we'll get to this and actually it's still not right, and kind of Tottenham and the bigger clubs are in this situation, we still don't have enough fans.
Absolutely.
And it's always been the issue from day one. This is not just we want cheaper tickets because we want cheaper tickets. And therefore, owner should subsidise us cheaper tickets. Part of it is that, like, you know, you're a billionaire and these numbers don't add up. But actually, it's still going in with the fact that there are not enough fans of this football club. You should be in your growth period of trying to attract bums on seats and not going for this strategy, which is someone's in town for the weekend. And yes, okay, some of the Saturday 3 p.m. Spurs sold out, the attractive ones sell out. The cup games get nowhere near.
Yeah.
The less attractive Premier League games, Everton on a Tuesday night in January, they said it was sold out. We know it was nowhere near in terms of actual people in that stadium. And they could have, you know, and they'll say, okay, well, it was sold out. But look, if you were...
So there's a massive bit of the stadium that doesn't have any seats in it at the moment.
Yeah.
Like,
we're
getting into a bigger stadium.
I don't think
anyone's understood this. It's nuts.
We don't have enough fans to sell out away allocations. And yes, I know the club doesn't really make any return on away allocations, but suddenly they all want us to go to Liverpool on a Wednesday night to support the team in the semi-final. They do want us all there because that's really important to the team to have a really big vocal support. We don't have enough fans in this football club. And if we were in a position like Spurs, like Liverpool, like Arsenal, where actually every ticket was gold dust in every scenario. You can't even get tickets to the reserve games. It's so sought after to go to these clubs. You would almost understand the kind of like supply and demand problem and that they can charge the earth. It's still not right to do so. And that's what some of these clubs are coming up against. But Fulham aren't in that position. And that's what drives me nuts most. We're not here saying lower the prices because we want cheaper tickets. Yes, that is part of it. But we're also saying like, you've got to grow. We've got to grow. We still are not big enough as a core fan base. Yes, we do quite well to swell the numbers with that like weekend tourist trade. And as lots of people have rightly said over and over again, as soon as we go down to the Championship, or if we get into the real dog days and go into League One and all of that, Craven Cottage will be a barren wasteland.
And I'm going to that, into that swimming pool against Stoke in December. I'm 100% looking at whatever it costs. But no, you absolutely make the right point. I think, you know, when you look at the ticket prices, if you want to go as a family, for example, with two kids or whatever, it's ridiculous. And obviously, of course, then you kind of compete against tourists or whatever we call people coming for weekend in London, and there's a whole different debate. I know Postecoglou spoke about the other day.
I think he speaks about it really well, right? Yeah. Like, it's, oh, day trippers are not a problem.
Yeah.
It's only a problem when you're utilising that as your primary source.
And you pit the group against each other. I think that's the problem, because if you think about going with two kids, for example, and you're up against people coming from overseas who don't care about whatever, they just want to get into that game, obviously they'll be able to pay more than you can. And at the end of the day, they'll not be there every week. But you want to be your local fans to be there every week. So in that sense, I think obviously the club would say, well, that's why the club games are organised differently. That's why we don't log tickets for season ticket holders, whatever. I just don't buy it. I think there's so much more that can be done there about it. And as you rightly say, I mean, what if things go wrong? I think that's part of the... That's what I find really weird about this whole thing, is that normally in business you plan about, you know, what if things go wrong and we go down to the Championship at some point, what then? Who's going to buy these tickets then? So I think we do need to do more about this and point that, you know, we need sustainability in finance, but we also need sustainability in terms of fund bases and people coming in and being properly committed to the club. So in that sense, I think there's lots of work to be done there.
Yeah, we all want sustainability. You're just going about sustainability in what I think a lot of fans, not everyone, but certainly I think, is the wrong way. It's the wrong way of going into sustainability. We're all on the same page that, yeah, Fulham is a sustainable football club. Brilliant. Absolutely what we want. But this is just, it's short-sighted. It still continues to be. And now this breakdown, I feel like, with the Fulham Supporters Trust is just, it feels like nails in this coffin. And I don't know, Jack, if we're ever going to repair this until there is significant change in personnel in the club. I still see it one day. Someone's going to come in 10 years and be like, wow, okay, I've got some fixing to do.
I've got some work to do. Yeah, exactly. And trying to repair those relationships. But I suppose that's kicking the can down the road, right? And then the moment, that isn't something anyone cares about by the sounds of it. And look, maybe I'm speaking out of a lot of turn, but that's the bit that, you know, higher up, you're like, well, these are the relationships that people have no interest in salvaging. And therefore, you know, it's that whole, it always hits me. You know, there was that video from the season ticket. I think it was maybe 9, 10. Yeah. And it holds, there's a whole line about it. It's like, we don't matter, we don't matter, we don't matter anymore. But there's one club where every fan still matters. And I'm like, wow, we have gone so far from that point. And this is it. And, you know, to take your point, Jakob, if they were like, cool, we're selling tickets on the day and all tickets at Fulham are £150 a ticket, right? But if you're a member, or say £100 a ticket, if you're a member, you get 50% off. Now, 50 quid is probably still too expensive for, you know, a standard ticket. But at least I'd be like, well, they're trying to trap that tourist trade whilst there is a, you know, an obvious version of this that is still geared towards the membership, and people who pay that membership every year therefore get, you know, an actual result out of it. What do they get at the moment? What's the Fulham membership worth?
It's a fiver off a ticket.
So, like, is it at 75?
But that membership costs £50.
Exactly. So you'd have to go 10 times a game to even justify it as a point. You'd have to go 10 times a season, which is fine. Like,
yeah, there's a couple of little perks. You get away tickets a bit easier, but, and stuff like that.
Like, generally, it doesn't really make any sense. But if you're like, cool, we're going to go and try and trap this tourist market and make as much out of them as possible, which has its own problems, but isn't really my argument here. I'm a bit like, okay, fine. But if you're going to do that, then you have to be able to justify it to your loyal core membership. And there is no sense that that's what's happening, as far as I'm concerned.
And often it's just about the tone as well. You know, I looked up the announcements from different clubs about season tickets for next year. Most of them, or many of them, have already announced tickets for next year.
We are still waiting. Ours will be after the City games.
We're still told that there's been no discussion about it. It's just us speculating.
You'd be fired. If you were a CEO and you were looking at next year's accounts, right, and you were doing this, any other business, and you didn't have any projected figures for next season because you hadn't decided on what they were going to be, you'd be fired.
I mean, that's what I find so difficult, because obviously you must have had some conversations about it.
Yeah.
It's been happening. So can we just have a meaningful conversation about it? But I was trying to say that, for example, Brighton, they said, you know, we're increasing the price tickets. The prices by, I think, 6 to 8%. But the statement about it is littered with sentences like, it's unfortunate that we have to do it. We are acutely aware of what it means to you guys and how difficult it is. We are thinking actively about ways it will be easier for you to pay for it. Meanwhile, what we got was like, Riverside is open. By the way, you can also extend your season ticket elsewhere. Yeah. And it's 18% more expensive than before. So I think that also matters. So it's A, about transparency, how these decisions are being made. You know, we can have a meaningful conversation about how to organize all of this. I think the key point I'm trying to make is that really there's a lot of people, and I hope the three of us, we can say we are reasonable people as well, that understand commercial pressures on clubs in 2024 and kind of the way the game changes and the way it's going. We fully understand. We know that this is a difficult position to be in. But at the end of the day, it's just a balancing act. And we need to find something that make it work for the fans as well. So transparency about it, communications about it, just, you know, being open about it. When I hear, oh no, we've not had any conversations about it, like, seriously, like, just talk to us. Just have a conversation about it. Think about how we can make it work. Because I do think it's important. And obviously, the club says, to your point earlier about how you should be grateful for the investment in the club, that, you know, Craven Cottage is now safe as the home of Fulham because of Riverside investment. Yes, it is. I'm incredibly grateful for that. But for me as a fan, at the moment, it's kind of like, I know it's there, it's shiny and nice for so many other people. From my relationship with the club, it has not improved as a result of it.
No. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, short of the fact that we're still at Craven Cottage, yeah.
Which is very important, 100%, it is. But
of course it is, but also, like, without being funny, that was one of the promises made at the very start of this tenureship, right? And the only person that was ever seemed to be interested in taking that away was the idea of this move to Wembley, which never obviously materialised. I'm not accusing anyone of anything. But the only reason that was discussed as an idea was the idea of, you know, moving away from the cottage. It wasn't like the fans were like, oh, cool, we go somewhere else then. You know, like, if that's the case and a club like you'll do this, like, cool, give us a pitch owner's trust, like at Chelsea. If that's your commitment and that's your, you know, agreement that Fulham will not be leaving Craven Cottage, give it to us. Give us the pitch. You know, we'll pay for it. We'll do the, you know, we'll do the things that they do. And it secures the fact that the pitch could never be sold without express permission from 2,000, 3,000 fans. Fine. Back it up. Back up the statements. And we're not getting any of that. There's no follow through.
Jakub, really appreciate having you on today. Was there anything else that you kind of thought important to mention at this juncture?
I think it's just to go back to what we started. Like, I do understand the anger because I'm angry as well. And I do understand why the club is angry about things, but we need to change it. We need to reset that relationship somehow. I don't think this kind of current way of doing things is going to get us, both the club and the fans, in any good position. But as we try to figure it out, we need more people to join the trust. And I mentioned this earlier, I can say it again. If, you know, new people come in, come up with an idea, a tactic, how to get this sorted and kick me out of the board because of this, perfectly happy with that, as long as I can sit in my H5 seat for the foreseeable future. So, but I do think that as we talk about how the game changes, how the club ownership questions change, how all these kind of considerations about commercial relationship with fans change, we do need a strong representation of our fans in whatever form. Not for the FAB, for the trust. So please do join, even if just to come and shout at me and say I'm wrong.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I didn't know about the trust until fairly recently, actually, is that it is actually, especially in ratio of fan base as well, it's one of the highest memberships of a trust at our kind of level, isn't it?
That's right. That's absolutely right. I think you do have clubs with a much smaller number.
Well, I heard Villa's was like 100 or something, yeah, like that.
We have more than that, by multiple. But I think, again, because we talked about the kind of commercial imbalance as these discussions continue, the only thing that can make our argument as a fan base stronger to the club is the numbers. If we have the numbers to back it, because always, you know, the club would go back and, are you representative? How many people you can mobilize, whatever, whatever. If there's a 8,000, 10,000 people in the trust and saying actively taking part in consultation surveys, whatever, being active and showing, yes, whatever we decide at the end of the day, we want to do it. That sends the clearest possible signal to the ownership that we are willing to act as one. And whatever that direction is, I think we should be doing all we can to unite in that sense and work together.
Yeah. Jakob, thank you so much for coming on the pod today.
Thank you.
And Jack, thank you.
Always a pleasure, Sammy. Thank you.
Over the weekend, we'll be releasing the Jack and Joe Show podcast. They're doing a little bit of a squad roundup, and they're looking at different areas of the squad, how Fulham can improve, who should be kept, who could potentially go in the summer. So check that out. And then we'll be back with the Thursday Club this time next week, looking ahead to the game against Sheffield United, which I'd like to hope Fulham have a chance in.
Yeah, absolutely. And Cookie and I are going on the YouTube channel later on this week to discuss Rodrigo Muniz. So if you want a little deep dive into how he's turned his season around, then we'll be looking at that on a sort of mini whiteboard kind of job.
Oh, nice. I didn't actually know about there that, but great. Good to hear. Right, have a lovely weekend, whatever you get up to, with no Fulham to keep you busy. And we'll see you very soon. 20 Whites.
You boys in green.